You have accessed the audio file that addresses organizing a submission, which is intended to assist agencies, their designees, and applicants in taking the sort of sea of information about their project and its many details, their concerns, their looming deadlines, and other project components that may be overwhelming them, and effectively corralling all this sort of noise into a logical order of events. If followed in proper sequence, this strategy will assist both agency or applicant and SHPO reviewers alike, because the decision-making process will have moved from a logical beginning to the middle to the end without dropping anything out and introducing extra work. In addition, this audio file is intended to provide a bit of extra explanation regarding how an agency or applicant goes about defining an area of potential effect, as well as distinguishing and considering potential direct, indirect, and cumulative effects, something that gives both neophytes and experienced cultural resource managers alike pause. Why? We're not quite sure, but we strongly suspect that it may be a function of the fact that the agency or applicant is so keenly aware of all the project details and pressures, the associated deadlines, and sometimes is particularly aware of a known resource or a cluster of important resources in their project area that the agency steadfastly wants to protect, that these important resources and concerns regarding their associated determinations of eligibility and effect are so far to the forefront of that individual's mind that they may well be tempted to jump to sort of the good stuff, that things get out of sequence, or an almost reverse logic is employed where folks work from resources, or even worse, from determination of effect back to resources, back to APE. And this can have unfortunate implications in time and cost delays, as well as for other parts of the project and, to be sure, for the project review. So the sequence of events, just like the ordering of sections on the document called the Recommended Cover Sheet for Section 106 Review, which is provided in the Forms tab here in the Review and Compliance section of the SHPO website, it builds progressively on a foundation that is firmly established and based in project-specific details. First, the agency or the applicant needs to clearly define the undertaking and all of its constituent parts. Applicants are often tempted to spend more time describing why their project is needed. For instance, economic development, job creation, bringing affordable solar power to a rural community, for instance. Then they do spend time in their submission describing what it is that their project consists of. It is truly the latter, that is, what is being proposed, that review and compliance staff need to understand thoroughly in order to successfully and expeditiously perform our review. That said, while an undertaking may ostensibly be a construction project, any building activity may well first need to be preceded by lot clearance, removal of trees and vegetation, grading, earth moving, digging of utility trenches, and other associated activities, each of which has the potential for effects to historic properties, if any are present. Thus, if one only focused on the finished result, something like a cluster of much-needed new houses, for instance, it might be very easy to miss the associated project components that also have a potential for effects. For this reason, a really thorough description of the undertaking and all of its component parts will go a long way toward the second step in this process, namely successfully defining an area of potential effects, or APE, that is adequate to the undertaking. So the second step in looking to define a project's area of potential effect, or APE, an agency should not start with an arbitrarily defined search radius or a set buffer zone around the center of their project area or one of its features. Instead, an agency begins, as we've just established, with their project description, that is, what it is that it is going to do, and each and every one of the project components. Things like the areas of ground disturbing activity, the staging areas, the laydown areas, the access roads, the location of any features or resources that will be abandoned in the course of the undertaking. When these things are marked on a map, they define the agency's direct area of potential effect, or direct APE. With all these project components marked on a map, one then moves outward to identify all areas to or from which the proposed actions can be seen, heard, felt, things like vibrations from blasting activity, for instance, maybe even smelled if that's relevant, but how these project components may be experienced. And the point is to engage all of the senses. For visual effects, as one example, this may necessitate use of visual simulations and simply walking the area. This expanded area constitutes the undertaking's indirect area of potential effect, or indirect APE. It too should be identified on a map, and the agency or applicant may wish to use different colors or perhaps a dashed line, but some sort of convention to distinguish the direct from the indirect APE. Collectively, the project APE, which is often far larger than simply what the applicant considers to be the project area, is the area of potential effects for which both direct and indirect, and by indirect we mean visual, auditory, atmospheric effects, may occur. An agency will want to be sure to include in their submission, either in their inventory report or in the transmittal letter if this information is not present elsewhere, some sort of a justification or a statement of the rationale for how this APE was determined. When identifying the indirect effects likely to be produced as a result of a particular action, it's also a good idea to distinguish whether the effects will be permanent or only temporary in nature. If temporary, it is also a good idea to state that and to estimate the duration of these temporary effects. In addition to direct and indirect effects, an agency should consider and identify any potential for cumulative effects as a result of their undertaking. So what do I mean by cumulative effects? Well, if your project were a sewer replacement project, you will most likely impact more than just the trench where the old pipes are being abandoned and the trench where the new pipes are being laid, or perhaps the old are being removed and the new pipes are being laid directly in their place. Either way, if trees were being removed in the project corridor to facilitate equipment access to the site, for instance, then the project might then be opening views from a historic property or properties that were previously screened from view by the trees or other landscaping. More important, the sewer replacement or extension of infrastructure might encourage new construction or growth in the area that could well have a cumulative effect that is greater than the short-term effect of the current project. Only at this point, after the direct and indirect APE are established and the potential for direct, indirect, and cumulative effects identified, does the agency move on to identifying any and all resources located within the above-defined APE. So the agency makes a list of all archaeological and architectural resources, as well as any sites of religious or cultural importance to Native Americans that may have been identified in the course of tribal consultation for the undertaking. From here, the agency turns to the list of resources within the APE to determine which, if any, are eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places. In so doing, the agency is identifying whether there are any historic properties within the area of potential effect. Each resource is considered in relation to each of the four significance criteria, A, B, C, and D, any criteria considerations, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, that may apply, and all seven aspects of integrity. That is, integrity of location, design, setting, material, workmanship, feeling, and association. If some of the resources are associated with one another, the agency may find it valuable to evaluate those resources both collectively as a district as well as individually, as sometimes resources that are found to be individually not eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places are still found by the agency to be contributing resources to an eligible district. And finally, the agency makes a determination of effect for the undertaking. This is based on the presence or absence of historic properties within the APE and whether or not any historic properties are likely to experience loss of their character-defining attributes as a result of the undertaking. By character-defining attributes, I'm referring to those qualities that rendered them eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places in the first place. All of this is far more eloquently stated in the regulations for implementing Section 106, which are found at 36 CFR 800. But walking through it here serves to underscore the reason for why we don't jump ahead and instead always follow the order of first define the undertaking, all of its associated parts, and locate them on a map. Second, define the project's area of potential effect, which is often much larger than what is envisioned as sort of the quote-unquote project area by the applicant. Third, complete an identification effort and reach agency determinations of eligibility for all resources within the area of potential effects. And finally, four, reach the corresponding determination of effect. There is a logical order of events, and it is important that the project APE is based on project specifics, the scale and nature of the undertaking, considerations such as the topography, which is rarely uniform across the entire project, and other site-specific details versus arbitrarily and externally imposed search areas or buffers, or even allowing the presence of a particular known resource to swamp or overshadow consideration of other resources if it is made the focus from the outset. If an agency follows this process, it will create a readily understandable administrative record, lead to quicker conclusion of Section 106 consultations, and above all, will ensure that it remains in compliance with federal law and regulation.